So let's just do general introduction of the course, then I think we'll do introduction of students, and we'll talk about groups, and then there's some more things I want to do in this first lecture. So have a look at the objectives, page one. Can you receive for this machine? Can you receive emails on the machine you have?
Yes.
Because I just sent the syllabus. So.
Fine, I'll get it.
So the main two objectives are being able to design what I have now called here a knowledge organization system, or KOS, or I said just class, which is a general term to include classification schemes, the story, and ontologies, and taxonomies, and whatever the terms are with overlapping meanings. If you really want to get a idea of what all of these different things mean, my encyclopedia article is probably a good place to look in. Okay. So design and constructing is one objective, and then two is evaluation. We'll evaluate. And the design objective has sort of three sub-points. After it, understanding design options, familiarity with the procedures to be used, and then the most difficult in some way is to have an idea how you would plan and implement the project. People always ask me, how long will this take? And I don't know. I mean, you have some idea. If it's vocabulary that's expected to have 200 terms on some very specific subject, let's think of it as a very specific subject. The classification of life events, which we need for several purposes. I mean, we needed one in the alcohol of the lactosaurus for because life events or stress are often combined with stress. And stress is a risk condition, if you will, for alcohol or drug abuse. So we needed a classification of life events. Now, it doesn't take 10 years to construct that. On the other hand, how long have people been working on mesh?
That's continuous. They still do it.
They still have three people working on just updating it. So it's a huge project. So you can give some estimation, but some things turn out to be easy, some things turn out to be more difficult. So it's really hard to say. Having done one gives you a little better intuition. I mean, nobody has come up with a formula. So it's all intuition, having done what gives you intuition. And also having done a piece of one gives you a much better basis for evaluation. I was tempted to say just that criminals may be making the best cops because they know all the tricks. So there are additional objectives. You need to know about computer assistance cars because you can't do it manually anymore. You should have an idea about automated and semi-automated methods, which is different from point three was computer assistance in clerical tasks. So you still do the intellectual work, but you input it and you have the machine deal with it. Automated or semi-automated methods is where you actually get mind traumas from text, or even trauma relationships, or even structure. There's a lot of methods that will support that, and we'll talk about those. You need to know about updating, obviously, how that the mesh has been in existence for probably 50 years or more than that, and it continuously updates. So you have to have some idea how to do that. A big problem today, particularly, I mean, always has been, but it's bigger now, was interoperability. Actually, the first time I encountered this was when I read about libraries changing over from Dewey Decimal Classification to LC. In the 30s, a lot of university libraries used Dewey. And they switched to LC, so you have to have the mapping. And of course, on the web, there are all these different people doing different things with their own schemes, and how can they ever get together? The big problem of interoperability. Automatic mapping, and we'll talk about that as well. And that should be 7, not 8. The standard piece we build in the class, not necessarily, you can do something else if you like, but the standard piece is sort of a more traditional thesaurus that would be used like in a bibliographic retrieval system or in a job employment classification system, whatever. And with an emphasis on meaningful structure for people to be able to absorb. But there's a lot of work going on in automating systems and support automatic reasoning and such. So, I mean, you may have the ACROLOC, which is the thesaurus of the Food Agricultural Organization. It's meant for bibliographic retrieval. But now, think about supporting some system of computer-assisted farm management, where you have some reasoning going on that says when should this pesticide be applied. There's weather conditions go into it, and first of all, you have, actually maybe not even that, maybe what pest control method should be used for this crop. That needs a certification in the background of all the different plants, all the different pesticides, all the different methods of certification, of weather conditions, of soil conditions, but it needs a more sophisticated relationship that can be used by the artificial intelligence firm. So when some people talk about ontologies, that's what they mean. Other people will call the alphabetical list of terms an ontology, because it makes it sound up-to-date and fancy. So you should have an understanding of what these systems are and what they do. So page 256, a brief overview of what we will do in the course. There's a lot of reading. Sort of the core component is the main project, 2.2. You will start today an introductory mini project that gets you once through the process, so you know what to expect. The first half of the semester will be taken up primarily with the project, and it's a way sort of an apprenticeship feature. I mean, there's thesaurus or ontology construction, or it's a cost construction to be inclusive, is still sort of an alt. And a good bit of it you learn by doing. So it's, and we will meet in groups and discuss individual how we have this laid out and how it could be improved and so forth. So, second half will be lectures that primarily address the strategic objectives laid out. And so strategic glass theories will be used in two ways. So one is discussion and theory of method. Sometimes I will lecture, but a lot of this is reading from the text. And so if we said we discuss this topic based on the text, I expect you to have credit, because I couldn't probably say it any better than I already wrote it down. But then there are questions that come up that we can discuss. Okay, you see the course requirements on the bottom of page 2. There's a mini project, which you can either do individually or you can do it as a team. There's the main project, which could be done individually, but it's preferable for your own purposes to do it as a team. I wonder whether this thing works or not. You know what? I think I'm going to unplug this and see what happens. There's a mic in the machine itself. We'll see what happens. After you've finished your scheme, you will do an indexing exercise, which all of that is described in more detail later on. Which is structured so that each of you does something individually, but it will also then be compared. Now, each of you individually will do a short reflective paper. Three to five pages of single space, times common, 12 points with 1-inch margins. I need to figure out how many rules that is and do it in rules. And it could be longer, if you wish. The idea is for you to just reflect and cement in your mind what you learned in the course. So if you come back 5 years and say, what did I do in 775? What did I learn? That paper should give you a good answer. And there is a final exam, which will be an evaluation of an existing thesaurus. So that's how the course goes about. Page 3 has the readings. I forgot, I'm going to bring the last book, the HEP on Policy Management, which may not be as good as I thought, but it's more talking about ontology management than actually telling you how to do it. But I will put it on the bookshelf. That part out there. And there are some readings attached to these, like after the big green divider, there are some readings. And there's a few more references on the rest of these pages. You have the calendar in short form and in long form. And it just details what I just said. The way I structured the long form of the calendar this time, so you have what's happening on the day. And then, if you turn the page to page 4, in a bold box, you have what you need to do from today to next week. And then you will have it next week. So in each sheet is one. Well, at the end, I save some paper, but at the beginning, each sheet is one. Each week is a sheet, which has what's due that week in a bold box. And what's going to be discussed that week in a black box. Okay, so let's have a look at the mini project. Which is on page 7. Actually, I stopped the pink pages in between. Maybe we could shut that door. So you will walk through the entire process using as a domain sort of referral services. And the first step has already been done for you, terms have been collected. On page 9, and 10 and 11, you have the terms. Page 9, you use all the terms that are embodied. Page 10 and 11, you just use the ones in stores. And actually, for between now and next week, there's a lot of reading to do. And so we will start with the mini project, but just sort of on a conceptual level. The actual processing of terms will start next time, along with readings and procedures. And we do it manually. It's a good idea to go through the process once manually, if you never want to do it again. You want to do it by computer. You do it manually, and we'll distribute calls. So there's a form to record the terms on with all the information about the term. And then you can call them, distribute on the table, get some order, and type it up. That's essentially the process. But again, I'm not going to describe the process in detail now because you will read about it starting next week, and then you will actually, and as you read it, you do. For the main project, we will use software. Actually, I'm going to be have these places. You give them your data, and they'll process them and give you the results back. So I'll be that place for you. Right now, I'm using a program I wrote many, many years ago because there's nothing on the market that really does all the functionality. On the other hand, I think by now I'm probably the only person who can use it. Just people who used it earlier have forgotten. And so I will just talk about file formats, I will process them, send them to you. And it, since it's so old, I have never figured out how to run it on the Windows XP. It's kind of an old machine I have at home, on the Windows 95. I'm still... It used to run on this machine out there, but then it crashed, and when they reset it up, it doesn't work. So I really need it. You can't find anybody anymore who really knows the old machines.
Yeah.
And the operating system and how to set things up. I know it can be done, but anyway, that's the mini project. Then we have the main project. The description starts on page 13. Uh, So in the introductory paragraph, note well the boat. Nobody should be disappointed if the cost developed is not perfect. You will not be satisfied with what you come up with. It's too short a time, for one thing, to do something big. And I was very heavily involved in developing the alcohol of the Brachiosaurus. And when we went from the first to the second edition, we said, what? How could we have done that? This is not well structured. This can be done much better. So whenever you come back, you see, but see, in the meantime, there are other areas which remain structured well. So out of a lot of chaos, you created order, and some things are ordered better than others. So now, once you have this order, you see, wait a minute, this place is not good, and this will happen. And this was after working on these things for 3 years, because the first edition came out. So just a semester is just not enough time to really do something perfect. And the real result is what you know in your mind about how to do this. The product you produce is just a means. I mean, you have to exercise, you have to learn this to reveal this process somehow. And so, if there's something useful that can be applied to you, might as well. So it may not necessarily, it will not be perfect. Okay. I mean, the other thing to know about this cost development is like washing dishes, you're never done. Because you always need to update. I think I should. There's also there's sort of a German myth that is very apropos to developing a cast. We learned the Smith how he made a sword that then had magical powers. The first thing he did, he had to collect the ore and refine it. And then he made a sword. But that wasn't it. Then he filed the sword into metal dust. And he fed it to the birds. And he collected the bird droppings. And then he refined the metal again. And then he made the real sword. So you may develop one version and then take it apart completely. And now you know how to create a new version. Actually, there is a simple way to say there is an adage in computer programming, you always make the first version to throw it away.
Yeah.
The first version of the program you write in order to learn how it should be written. And then you write to the other thing. And this applies here as well. Okay, why in groups? A lot of structure can be much more easily worked out when you discuss it with somebody. If you do it on your own, there's always some idiosyncrasy. Now, two, there may still be things that not everybody would agree with. But in one system I worked on, we had a group of, I think, four or five who worked on this, and we would review all the sections as a committee. But when something new was going to be developed, we had one person assigned to develop it. Before it came to the committee, it was to be discussed with one other person. And sort of if you think in terms of what change the committee would make, maybe 80% of those changes were already made by the two people. Mm-hmm. So when the two people agreed on something, it already had a much higher probability to fly in the whole committee than if it just was one single person. But at least you get one different viewpoint. But sometimes you get comedians, sometimes you, now these statements you can do this collaboratively and you get a discussion going among 100 people. But on the other hand, it's useful to have a starting point. But that's why groups, and sometimes it's so hard to do something that it's really easier to. So you have an idea, you don't know it's good. Well, could we do it that way? And the other person says, no, it doesn't really good. Oh, well, that's good. So sometimes it's useful for two people to work together on the original, the first layout, because it's just too hard to do. And it's a lot better to bounce ideas back and forth. You need to cover sort of initially a reasonably comprehensive area. So you get some idea of how do I structure a topic like biology, what are the structural components. Clearly you could not develop a thesaurus on biology in one semester. So you then narrow it down and you pick certain sub-areas and deal with those in the project. The computer assistance allows one to do a little more than was possible 30 years ago when all of this had to be done on paper. By the way, sometimes even with computer assistance, you will still use paper. When you have difficult arrangements, there's nothing better than arranging slips of paper on the table. Unless somebody gives me a computer surface this big on which I can with a pen move things around as easily as paper. No, I'm doing a paper with Ken Fleischman, a mechanical human author on values and digital libraries, and so we had a little sort of a classification of values that they have, and it was, I think there was just 9 from one source of value sensitive design paper had identified 9 values, and I wanted to arrange them in some order that makes some sense. So I printed out the list and I cut them out and I moved them around until I was satisfied. It was easier to do than in the word processing. Now, if it's easy to do, you can move them around into word processing. Otherwise, paper, if all else fails, if you can't really figure out, if it's hard to change the order, your mind is resistant to the change, and so you might not try out all the possibilities. It's very simple to move things around the table. Okay. There's a product described here, what you do. There's an introduction. Now, as we shall see, you need a conceptual data schema for the domain. And most of you, I think, know what that means. You haven't done 670 yet, so.
No, but I read the reading.
You read the reading, so you know what it means. Good.
Somewhat.
Okay. And there's an outline of the subdivisions for the entire field. Number 3, what I call a classified index or quick hierarchy. Just a listing of all the terms that represent the concepts you want to organize. And it's just that there's no information given for each term, so each term takes a line. That's to show the overall structure. And then for some of these terms, you have to work out the information. A definition. Synonyms, cross-references to other concepts. It would be too hard to do that for all of the, I mean, assume you do 5 pages, you have 150 concepts in the section that you worked on. To do definitions for all of them would be too much. You just do it for many. So you learn how to do it and where to find them. The alphabetical index, now, the different formats are all produced by the program. You just need to supply the information that goes in it. Part Format 11, right in there, has on the bottom shelf of the big blue booklet, a sample project. Page 14 shows the other two pieces. I don't think I need to go over those now. So let's talk about topics. And let me just summarize what the online discussion was. So actually, it would be a good idea to make introductions now. Melissa, why don't you start? Just tell a little bit what you do and why you're interested in the class and what you want to do for topic.
I'm Melissa Resnick, and I'm in a second year of my two-year fellowship program at the National Library of Medicine, and I'm working on some projects that deal with mesh, and I wanted to take this course to learn more about how to build a vocabulary. Not that I would ever do that for mesh. God help me.
And your idea of a project, her idea, let me just, the project is to do something that would be useful to NLM.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where they have, what is this, Disaster Management Resource Center?
Yeah, they have the Congress mandated that they put up a Disaster Management Research Center, and they have to come up with terminology in order for people to be able to get at information that's in the NLM as well as other libraries, and it has to go into mesh. So I want to help them with trying to come up with that, or a piece of it.
So it's disaster management generally, clearly with a focus on
medicine.
The medicine, medical aspect of that. Mm-hmm. And I believe Eric, who is not here because he's sick, he's interested in something science or medical, and he might well work with Melissa. Okay.
I'm Kate Mayo. I'm interested in visual resources for art and art history. So I was an art history major as an undergrad, and it's been very hard to find any classes in the that really relate to my interest in digital resources or art. So I'm doing an assistantship with Dagobert and a few other people that is collaborating with the Steve Museum project that he has been around information about. So I guess I took this class to sort of find my own interest of art and art history, and then also doing this assistantship that sort of complement
each other.
So, I know a lot of other people
who
are interested in art, too.
Marlene, I'm a librarian, and I'm taking this course. It was actually come up at my job. They asked me to come up with an index. I'm in the old newsflashes for our clients if you wanted to index them. And I came up with a very rudimentary one for 670, but it's just pretty useful. I do a lot of work on that to be able to classify the information that they're creating. So yeah, I don't really have specific information. That's one is cool, even though it's kind of why. But I was nervous to remind myself. So whatever you want
to do. I'm Rebecca LaPlante, and I'm in my second semester here, so I was interested in this course just because it seems like an interesting topic and a good way to jump into some more practical things associated with information management. And I'm also interested in the working with the Steve data, because I'm also working on a project that's using that data as well. But I'm also flexible to any other topic ideas. I don't have any subject areas in particular like medicine or art that I have a background in. My background is business and finance, which isn't terribly exciting. So it would be interesting to do something other than those areas.
I'm Chip Chase. I work at National Cathedral School for Girls, which is a K-12 private school, and I part of my library science degree and trying to get out of the schools and then just different. So anything, I've always been interested in indexing and kind of organizing, and so that's kind of what led me to take this class. And I'm also interested in the museum, I said, but I'm open to anything. I was an English undergrad, so anything in the humanities or that kind of thing is kind of my domain, I wouldn't say expertise, but that's sort of what's familiar to me, so.
Okay, so the people missing are Eric, and Diana Aram. So now Diana is also interested in the art project or something else. So we're going to have to figure, actually before we do this, since there are two people here from the project, this is an advanced course, whatever you want to address me is fine. First name is fine. Dr. Sorg, actually, I don't care if Mr. Sorg is fine. Either way, we can just do it all in first name in a small class. I do have a spreadsheet with the combined tags assigned in the first Steve project. There's a follow-up going on now where they do more research on tagging. We sort of collaborate with, they just mentioned this T3 tags, the text tags and trust. Northern investigative tagging. Whatever these comes out of these projects will be, the terms will be too late for this class, but there's a list of 10,000. Tags. Now, if we do this, we should approach it as constructing a knowledge organization system for the arts generally, with this as one source. We also have the Art and Architecture Thesaurus as a, we have the file here, so we can use that as a source. But we need to find other sources as well. Preferably machine-readable sources. Now, this could be, that's not how we could give. I mean, it could be a project just for five. It's sort of the outside limit of a project team, but it's not impossible. Particularly since most of the project meetings are at last time anyhow. And it's sometimes useful for you to meet outside class, but you could then divide it into sub-pieces. Maybe two people work in one section and two people work in another, so it could be workable. And it might, I mean, it would be something really useful in the end if we look at the mapping. So if that's of interest, now I don't, let's do due diligence and see whether there are also ideas people might want to pursue.
Is it just any domain whatsoever?
It would be any domain whatsoever.
Thinking like film terms as if for like a film school where it's both the theory about film and then the things that actually used to make film, like those kinds of terms. I don't know, I'm just...
That's film is actually there was some theme on the other, we did a film.
Oh.
Vocabulary, it doesn't matter, I'm not going to show it to you. You just come up with your own ideas. That's a possibility. It's actually not unrelated. A lot of the concepts may overlap. Mm-hmm. And the film is a genre of art. And I mean, what drum master can do is say if there were three people working on the Steve stuff and two on film, we could in the initial drum collection see which ones are in common.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Steve tags are, I think they're not on film. They're on film. There must be sites where people. I mean, I know there's this movie, internet movie database.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That do reviews. Do they actually do tagging? Yeah, I don't. I've never been there. I just know about it.
I can't.
I think they just do reviews.
Maybe genre tags, but that's probably
hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. And Jen Goldbeck set up a site.
Wouldn't it be subject too?
Yeah, that's.
Subjects, not necessarily as well. I mean, as well as genre, but that is.
I can't think of them.
I didn't know before. There's both the rate, like how many out of 10.
Okay.
I don't think there's any. I don't remember there being a place for 10.
Okay.
At this point, yeah.
There may be a site where they have tags.
Delicious might have a site, might lead you to a site that has tags.
For films?
Yes. Might. I would say it would.
And whether you could harvest them or not is a question.
I mean, it's an idea because you can get stuck in that world. I've done it.
Delicious.
Oh, my Lord, I've spun around in my head. So there might be something in that direction, too. Because they use a lot of keyword tags and stuff.
Is anybody else interested in films? Pursuing that as a topic?
It's definitely interesting. I'm not sure I have a driving preference in any direction. I don't know much about a lot of these.
That's
a
topic.
Awesome. I run away from film. I can't see it.
So that might, if we do this, we'd have the disaster management, the damage in the medicine, might have the two of you working on film and the other three working on the Steve project. Dan, I think, was definitely interested in the art piece. Yeah. Okay. Well. And we'll do some pipeline between the film and the thief tax. And before we leave, we're going to look at the calendar and see what you're supposed to do for next time. And we'll I think you're already going to look for some food. Even before the mini project is started, you'll do some sources so that. You can get to follow that, by the way. Okay, so that gets us to lecture 1.1. And the one thing I wanted to do is to just give some examples from knowledge organization systems, give you an idea of the things. So the first one I'm going to have you look at is this I'll call it Dr. Saras, which is one of the few thesauri that are based primarily on a classified arrangement. So most thesauri are based on an alphabetic arrangement. That's their main arrangement. And if they have any hierarchy, it's often constructed after the fact and not necessarily completely thought out as a meaningful arrangement. They actually mesh falls in that category. It started out as an alphabetical list it's sort of in between, let me say. It started out, as the name says, it was a list of subject headings.
Yeah.
They were arranged alphabetically. And when they started to do computerized searching in the early 60s, they thought that a hierarchy would be useful for searching, which it is. And then they developed what they call the tree structure. It's actually a misnomer because it's not a tree.
No, it's not a tree.
It's a polyhierarchy. The tree is a monohierarchy. It's a polyhierarchy. And technically, the mathematicians would call it a directed acyclic graph. It's acyclic because you can't have A is an arrow term B, B is an arrow term C, and C is an arrow term A. If you had that, it would not be good. Right? And that would be a cycle. So it's acyclic. It has no cycles in it. But one concept can have multiple four concepts. And in mesh, they have many. And they worked out the structure better than many thesauri. Better, for example, than ERIC, the Educational Reason Information Center thesaurus. That hierarchy is fairly flunky. It's not very good. I need to write what I wanted to say. It's just not a well-developed hierarchy. Mesh could stand considerable improvement in its development of hierarchy, but it's somewhat better in that direction. But it wasn't originally designed. You know, it came from a vocabulary of alphabetical. The A of thesaurus was developed from the ground up around the hierarchy. And it actually deals with all subject areas because everything has some connection to alcohol and target use. And so the first separate page that shows you the overall arrangement. And one of the tasks you will have to do is come up with an overall outline for the subject you deal with. And to give some rationale for that. But you can look at the AOD thesaurus on the web, and I would recommend it. Just do a Google search for AOD thesaurus, and the first URL that comes up goes into it. The next two pages just give you the overview to the next level. And it shows one way of representing a hierarchy. If it's the best way or not, the better one. But there are many different ways. And the text has many different examples of how to arrange and represent the structure of a class. So this is one. I thought it was nice. But and I just included here for reading, we wrote up a rationale for why the arrangement is in the order which it is. And so you may want to look at that and use it as a sample to do the same for your scheme. Because when you try to set out, when you try to write it out, you may actually find that you might want to rearrange it. Sometimes if you explain something to somebody else, you understand it better yourself. That's the case here. You know, why did I put this outline here again? I don't know. But the other two pages here are just two sample pages. One from just got to get a little back. In many schemes, including mesh, the area of chemical substances is confused. Because they mix together in the one arrangement, or try to mix together in the one arrangement, a functional perspective.
Yes.
What do the chemicals do? What are they good for? And a structural perspective, arranging chemical substances by their chemical structure. Now those are two different principles of arrangement, and it's better to keep them separate. And to make one classification by function and one by structure. And of course it means that a chemical could appear in both places. And so what you do, and I think what mesh actually does also, mesh lists in both places. Adhesosaurs were listed in one place and make a cross reference in the other. Mm-hmm. So that's one home place. And so in the example here on the Y classification, it's a classification by function. And do you want surprised to find there a function of anti-alcohol abuse agents? An agent, by the way, in this case, is a term that's used in medicine for chemical substances that do things. They call it an agent. It's a typical example of a homonym. Because it may be an agent of the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be an agent in the brokering world. They talk about agents. Sort of little programs that, or bigger programs that do things independently. We call them agents. So anyway, here's drugs. And so anti-alcohol abuse agents. And there are different ones. And so there is, which one did I do over here? Let me just... I think it's the first one, anti-alcohol intoxication agent. So that's a function of a drug that, when taken, will make people less likely to consume alcohol. For example, if you take this drug and you drink alcohol, it may make you sick. So that drinking alcohol makes you sick. You don't take it. Mm-hmm. Now, that's of course only for somebody who wants to really get rid of the alcohol addiction. If somebody who doesn't want to get rid, will do the other thing and not take the drug. But in any event, there is one ZN 2.12 fluvoxamine. Yeah, I don't know these names either. I have no idea what these things are. And then if you look on the other side by the structure Z, you will find ZN 2.12, fluvoxamine, and you will find that it is an amine, which in turn is an organic nitrogen compound, which in turn is an organic compound. So there, in Z, it's arranged by structure. In amines, there are some compounds that have attached to them a group of molecules that include the nitrogen. So just to give you a sense. Now, the next example is a different kind of knowledge organization system. It's a dictionary. A dictionary is a knowledge organization. Now, this one is not an ordinary dictionary, but it's a dictionary that is meant for people for whom English is a second language. And they figured that such people could get a better sense on vocabulary if the vocabulary was arranged in some classified order. And so you see an outline, and they call it a list of steps. And so they have a classification of everything. Did I give you the whole classification? I don't think so. And this doesn't go completely down to the entire detail, I don't think. No, because if you check, there's A30 living creatures and A50 animals, mammals. But then if you look further, there's some sample pages with details. Places where creatures are kept by man. Heading 842. There's a zoo, an aquarium, an aviary, an apiary. Okay, and there are animals, mammals. And they classified all the... Well, some people might object to that, but anyway, but they did man and monkey. It's one of the classifications. And then the horse and similar animals, A51. So this is good for learning. See, how would you explain all the names of the part of a horse? The easiest is to have a picture of a horse and the different parts labeled. That's what they did. The other piece that's nice here is this names for horses according to age and sex. Okay. See, there are different days. Stallion and colt and mare and filly and foal. So how do you explain what all these things mean? Well, you understand what is the reason for the distinction of different names of horses. And they're all based on age and sex differential. So there are two facets. So you can do a table with the two facets. Across there have sex, so they have a column for male, a column for female, and the rows are for age, full grown and young and very young or newborn. Now I may have arranged those in a different order, but that's a minor point. And so in the fully grown male cell is a stallion. In the fully grown female cell is a mare. Then a young male horse is a colt, and a young female horse is a filly. And at the very young, it goes across the two columns because it's a foal without distinction between genders. You could do the same thing for names of types of people. So they have more examples of it. They have these, I think the other example I could point out in the structure here is on the last page, names for one's father. Dad, daddy, pa, papa, papa, pop. And it tells you what these things mean. So by dad, it's informal also with any much older man. Daddy, informal, especially by and to children. So it gives you the context of use for these words. and it gives you an example. Again, it's this is knowledge about language, and it's very well organized, which is why I like this dictionary. Another example of a knowledge organization system, or what is known as concept maps. Which are two-dimensional representations of relationships between concepts. In the late 50s, early 60s, the 60s to early 70s, there was a lot of interest in the thesaurus world on this kind of representation. And in the textbook, there are many examples of thesauri that used graphical representations to show concept relationships. And some of them I thought quite useful. But that was sort of has died out and was reinvented in education. Some of you may have drawn bubble charts in English. No? I mean, in some English instruction before you do an essay, they tell you to identify what concepts you want to deal with and put them on a page and draw lines to see how they connect. Have you any of you done that?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've done it.
Yeah, so that's a graphical assistance to help you formulate your thought. And so there's a little text I'm not going to read now, but they're all some examples of concept maps. Okay, so the first is a there are different kinds of relationships. Carbohydrate is related to energy-giving food or energy-giving nutrients by energy-giving nutrients including carbohydrates. And actually, I didn't really, now I look at this in more detail. Then they have four providing energy from all three of them. You could argue with that relationship. Except proteins have two relationships, one to providing energy and one to growth and repair. And there are other examples. Supporting organisms. It's needed in mammals, and then in mammals they give you the muscular and skeletal system and so on. So there's a so this is one way to represent knowledge. It is also a way for children to produce these concept maps and sort of develop their thinking as they do so. And many educators actually think that it is concept maps are more useful as in sort of a constructivist mode, where people draw their own and learn as they draw them. And the children will learn more that way than with being presented with a finished concept map. On the other hand, you can't draw it all, and you could explain respiration by a text, or you could explain it by a concept map. So the brain content map is really one of where the relationships shown are not definitional, but stating empirical facts. You can't really make a sharp distinction between those, but mostly in sociology we deal with definitional relationships. But not always, actually. When you think about it, this classification of chemicals by function, is it definitional? If we say anti-alcohol intoxication agents, fluoxetine, it's not the definition of that chemical. It's just an empirical fact that's recorded in the thesaurus. The classification by structure is definitional. So that is with that structure, that's based on the definition of the chemical, but the other part is, so there's a lot of factual knowledge in many thesaurus as sort of these guys. But this particular chart doesn't have, I mean, it doesn't even say the structure. There's no definition of what is about is called pyruvate in there. The knowledge of that's right pronunciation. No chemist is here, and nobody can contradict me. But it just says where it comes from, what it does. It's empirical knowledge. So concept maps often, this one does only facts of us, or assertions, maybe a more neutral term. Some do only or primarily definitional links, and some do both of them mixed together. But for what it does, it may be the best one of the examples I gave here. By the way, if you were to figure out which is best to communicate this information, a text or this concept map, you'll probably find, what do you think you would find? Combination of the two. We'll probably try our best. But anyway, oh shoot, somewhere I made a mistake. Now I think my copy I made a mistake. Well, anyway, if you take this next example is from an ontology called Sumo, and that's a bona fide ontology, and it is, oh, I didn't put the full form, suggested upper ontology, what's the M stand for? upper Muir's ontology, suggested upper Muir's ontology. And upper ontology, as the name says, is sort of a knowledge organization system that includes structures, defines content at a fairly broad level that would be applicable across many areas, and that could then be fleshed out in more detail in specific areas. Okay. So, page 4, in part of Sumo, it's just a hierarchy of concepts. The very generic concept agent. And this means agent in the most general sense, anything that can act. And so sentient agent, a geopolitical area is clearly not a sentient nation, but you talk about, I mean, in international relations, you talk about countries as actors. The United States as a country is an agent. international relations. The city of Alexandria is an agent and can do things. Now, it's sort of funny that a group they have here, okay, a group would then cover generically all the organizations. This just gives you a sense of what they have in here. But what really makes it more than a hierarchy, just a hierarchy of concepts, is when you look on page, then the page number would be page 5, the example, definition, and axioms. That's where the difference comes in. So sense in the ancient is defined here. It has the ability to reason. Oh, actually, this is not a very well-written definition. See, it has rights, but may or may not have responsibility and the ability to reason. It has rights. That's what makes it sentient. It may or may not be able to reason. If it can reason, it's a cognitive agent, which is not in the hierarchy for some reason. Okay, and then they have what they call axioms. They have more formalized definitions. The question mark in front there is a variable. So it says, if something is an instance of the sentient agent, then whatever the something is capable of doing perception in role of experiencer. That is sort of the human readable version of the axiom. The what's below starting with the open parenthesis is a more formal logic definition of the same axiom. So there's always two ways to state the axiom. Well, look at another axiom. About in the making. So something is an artifact if and only if there exists some concrete process that's an instance of making, does the artifact result from the making? And making is constructing, manufacture, cooking. The next one is more complex, the social interaction. And it's spelled out in excruciating detail so that the system can reason with it. So that the system can tell if it has some formal description of some process, it can say whether this process is an interaction or not, a social interaction or not. And these are just, I mean, there's a whole big database of thousands, I don't know how many of these axioms they have, lots of them. And then finally, there's an example of what is known as a gene ontology, which is not that much different from just the Blaine hierarchy. It's a little more developed. Okay. It is represented just as a hierarchy. But the hierarchical relationships have different reasons. And in this case, the reason is given. So one is Izzah. That's the, what you often call the generic relationship. So this B is a with additional restrictions. Classic definition. So regulation of biological process is a kind of biological regulation. A negative regulation of biological process is a kind of regulation of biological process. Which I think means it hinders it. Positive is it reinforces it. So that's the one kind of relation that they have. The other kind of relationship they have is part. Or could either be a physical part, or it could be a component process. So we're talking about the gene ontology.
Ooh, yeah.
So actually for the part, let me first move to cellular component, because it's easier to understand there. So cellular component is a cell or is a cell part? And now a cell includes cell parts, but that's a part-whole relationship. Okay, so between cell and cell part there's a P. I don't know what a cellular bud is. Do you know?
Yeah, it has to do with when they multiply.
Okay.
Because they, if it's a yeast, they bud out and then they clip it off.
And they
squeeze it off and it becomes a new yeast.
Okay, so it's something that grows out of a cell and then eventually becomes its own cell.
Yes.
Okay. Sort of a cell. So a cellular bud is a cell pulp. It's a type of cell pulp. Now, cellular bud membrane is a part of the cell bud. Cellular bud neck is a part of the cell bud. Cellular bud tip is a part of the cell of the cellular bud. But again, external encapsulating structure is a kind of cell pulp. And all those cell parts are in a part relationship to cell, the inheritance. Okay, because it says a cell has a part cell part. That means anything that is a cell part is in a part relationship with the cell. And so the third relationship they have is, now we could go back to cellular process. Cell differentiation is a kind of cellular development process. Cell fate commitment is a sub-process of the overall process of cell differentiation. Okay, so cell differentiation consists of several sub-processes that are happening. And the process-sub-process relationship is done as part in the gene ontology. Cell differentiation also has a narrow term, regulation of cell differentiation. And that relationship is regulates. So regulating the cell differentiation is regulate cell differentiation. It's sort of obvious in this case, but it becomes narrow. Now, this gene ontology has its name not because it's an ontology of genes, but because it's an ontology to index genes or gene products. Where the gene product could be some protein or some whatever the gene does. So if there's some protein that's involved in the negative regulation of cell differentiation, then this protein will be indexed with that concept from the gene ontology. If that protein occurs in the cellular bud, it's indexed with cellular bud. And so then you can search for all genes or gene products that are involved in negative regulation of cell differentiation. And you would find multiple things from multiple sources. And the idea is to have a common scheme which is used by many different people and organizations to do this kind of indexing so that their databases are interoperable. And you can search multiple databases for the same thing. Okay. So by these more differentiated relationships, that's what characterizes something that should be truly called an ontology. And not just called an ontology because it's sort of prestigious to have that name. The gene ontology also has more information about each of the concepts, and that's given on the page 11, page 7. Why they came up with these synonyms narrower, who knows. But the point is that inhibition of cell differentiation is really a kind of negative regulation of cell differentiation. But it's at a level of specificity they chose not to include among the descriptors used for indexing. The synonym is exact, synonym is narrow, is not good terminology. The synonym is exact as a synonym. The rest are narrow terms not used for indexing. Actually, I would call this an other preferred term. They have a definition, I have never found a comment. Subsets are defined, the fruit fly has a subset. Not all the concepts of the gene ontology apply to the fruit fly, which is an organism often studied. So to make it easier for the person who does indexing of genes and gene products that in the fruit fly research, they will create a subset. And the indexer doesn't have to deal with the entire gene ontology, just with that subset. And so for other organisms. But clearly in this case, belonging to the subset conveys information. Okay? This is one organism this function occurs in. They also give the term lineage, but they just repeat the tree. So if you can easily display the tree, like on the left hand side, or if you look at the term, you will see what's above it and what's below it, one level, I think. But maybe all actually term lineage, you may see only what's above it, not what's below it. And you still don't get a whole sense of structure as you do when you look at the hierarchy. So just to give you another example of a hierarchy. Okay. We should take a break and reconvene here at 2:50, I guess. And Then we'll briefly discuss scheduling, because since there are two people missing, it's going to be a little iffy how we best to schedule things. And I'll continue the moment lecture one and give some examples of conceptual schema, so you can work on that task for next time. Okay. End of this lecture.